Okay, so for those who don't know, could you tell us who Colin Lester is?
Who Colin Lester is?
Yep.
Okay. Colin Lester is a manager in the entertainment industry. I'm the CEO of 21st Artists, which is a company that's owned by Universal Records, and I run the management division globally for Universal. Past businesses have included Wildlife and Wildstar, Wildlife Entertainment, where we represented and signed acts from the Brand New Heavies to Carlin Anderson, Travis, the Arctic Monkeys, and Wildstar Records, Craig David, who we also managed, to Connor Reeves, to Latricia McNeil, and many more that I've missed out, such as Bomb the Bass, and many artists that have sold records with me over the years.
Now, there's a lot of myths about what it is that actual artist managers to do. So for you, when you manage somebody, what is it? What is the role that you actually play for your new clients, your artists?
A manager's role is very, very varied. It can be anything from being a facilitator to a creative director, a financial director. It basically encompasses the whole of an artist's day-to-day career and long-term. So what a manager should be looking out for is the commercial end of the artist, the longevity of the artist, and the opportunities that come the artist's way, and making the right decisions on behalf of and with the artist, given that the artist doesn't have the commercial experience, certainly that I would have as a manager. They need to look to their managers the same way that I had to look to them in the creative world. If I was a musician or a producer, I wouldn't be a manager. I'm a manager, I'm not a musician. I look to them to create the magic. Quite often, artists think that managers are magicians. They mistake us. They think we're magicians. But I'm as good as what you bring me in. If I'm managing you, let's say you're making album two, I'm not a magician. I can't make album two sell millions of copies if the quality of it isn't good enough. So we are quality control. But it's down to an artist to understand that. You know, it's very, very important for artists to understand that a manager's role is very broad. And recently, I was asked to talk about the care of duty on a personal level. And a manager does have a care of duty. That care of duty, believe it or not, isn't about finding them the nearest drug rehab clinic or putting them into, you know, situations that they're the most comfortable in. Okay, obviously you're going to put your artists or your clients in a situation where they're going to succeed, so you're not going to put your client in an environment they're not going to succeed in, but you've got to push their boundaries and you have to maximise their potential. I don't believe that by sending a client to a clinic makes my care of duty. I have a care of duty to the artist, I have a care of duty to the people I ask to invest in that artist, which 9 out of 10 times is a record company and a publisher, and I have a care of duty to my own business, my own staff, to make sure that collectively we actually do what we are set out to do, and that's progress the career of our clients.
In terms of a personality, how would you describe your own management style?
My own management style is very laid back. My management style, I've never sort of looked at me and said, oh, I've got this management style. It's quite, I would never categorise myself to say I've got a management style. You know, I'm honest. I'm honest. The one thing that you've got to have in this business is integrity. And without honesty, you'll never have integrity. So as a manager, I have integrity. That's the essential part of management, because that gives you your reputation. And without reputation, you don't have a business. So my style of management is honesty. And if that means telling an artist something they don't want to hear, you know what? That's what I'm going to do. And if I don't like it, this is the wrong home. Then, like I say, get your mother to manage you, get your best friend to manage you, get your girlfriend to manage you and tell you how great you are. This is not the home where I'm going to tell you how great you are. This is, I'm going to tell you the truth. And let's be really honest, none of us are great every day. None of us. I don't care what jobs we do, whether we work in the music industry, the city, politics, none of us are great every day. We can't be. But it's important that we're better on most days than we're not. So my job is to guide artists, to help them and create something that is not only commercially successful for them, but it's something that has the integrity for me and for them. And Craig David is as successful today, live-wise, as he always has been. In fact, he makes more money at the moment working live because of the grounding we did in 2001 with him than he did in 2001, quite frankly. And that's because Craig David is a perfect example of artist development. We've continued to make records with him. We've continued to use social networking sites and new technology that's available to us for Craig to stay in touch with his fans. And Craig is recording a new album at the moment that, interestingly, it's an album that I said, Craig, you know, you've been on this roller coaster for 10 years. You've earned the right to do what you did with Born to Do It. And that's make a record that I have absolutely no commercial input in to say, well, radio will play that, or they won't play that, which is, unfortunately, what happens when you have a 7 million selling record as your first record. You're on the roller coaster, like it or not, you're on it. And now you have an expectation. You have a financial expectation, you have an expectation to everyone around you, and all media around you judge you on that. And quite frequently in the UK, we knock that, we put it down. And we say, oh yeah, he's been too successful, and is he going to match up to it? I bet he doesn't. Well, of course, if you tell the media and you tell enough people, then it doesn't happen anyway. It's just, you know, that's how life is. So with Craig, we just carried on working. We carried on working internationally. He sells records and concerts all over the world. He'll tour from here to Australia, you know, selling from 1,000 to 10,000 capacities. And that's called artist development. That's called about long-term planning. And today, what would I do with Craig? Nothing other than what we are doing. He's making a record that he believes is representative of him at this point in his career, and not for the first time has to fit some sort of a, you know, commercial hole or square, you know, whatever you want to call it. He's making something that he did the first time. What do I think's right? And that's what he's doing. And all I'm doing is giving him opinions and guiding him. When that record's finished is when my job starts. But trust me, I won't take a product out to the consumer until I'm actually convinced that it's right as well. So I'll take what he thought is representative and then tidy it up around the edges.
In terms of the industry, what's your take being a manager of 360 Deals, and is it something that you would advise your artists to sign?
No, I don't think 360 Deals are fair. I think a 360 deal is a deal that is giving the record company a lot more than they're giving back. And I think in terms of saying we're going to take a large piece of your live income, a gross, and we're going to take a piece of your merchandise, and we're going to take a piece of your publishing, we take a piece of everything in return for the investment, I think is ridiculous, because they're not offering speciality in those areas. They're not offering management specialities. They're not offering publishing. They're not offering necessarily merchandise, although obviously Universal own merchandise companies, management businesses, obviously, etc., etc. And I think it's going to go in that way where as a business, we will be able to offer everything. And I think at that point, we will have a right to do those sort of deals. But at the moment, I think it's completely unbalanced, and it's obviously a way that record companies can protect or try and protect their income, and I understand that, and I totally get it. But record companies are the people that were responsible, if we think back to, you know, the good old days of the 70s and 80s, that made so much money and didn't reinvest it in the business, and protect our... and didn't protect... Do you want to go again? Record companies, let's not forget, were the people that were responsible for the invention of new technology, but didn't really invest in protecting it. So they took the big bonuses out in the 70s and 80s instead of reinvesting it in the business protecting the technology. But ultimately, it's technology that got us into this mess, and it is technology that will get us out of this mess eventually. But 360 deals, for me, all that does is actually tells us that the record company is struggling, which is correct, and that the artists will continue to struggle, as they used to back in the day where the record companies made the money. Artists didn't make money because touring wasn't lucrative, whereas now, you know, touring and all auxiliary rights becoming more and more lucrative, and they want a piece of that. But I think there is a balanced deal to be done. I do think that record companies who do invest heavily in artists and should continue to do so are entitled to a piece of the whole pie because they are investing to create that. But I don't believe 360 is the fairest way.
Okay, and
it's too simplistic. 360 is too simplistic. That's why it doesn't work. And yet I'm a person that agrees in simple deals, simple solutions, but 360 just doesn't work. It's too simplistic. Almost backward.
And an issue which I know you're passionate about, illegal downloading. For being that you're in the industry, what are the knock-on effects that you're seeing of illegal downloads, and how it's impacting on the industry as a whole?
Look, 1.2 billion tracks were downloaded in 2010, as opposed to 370 million that were actually purchased. So there's a massive call on music. How many of those people would have actually bought the record? It's impossible to tell. It's absolutely impossible to tell. Other than people, there are a percentage, and I don't know what that percentage is, but the truth is, rather than say what the future is, where we're going, how do we deal with that, yes, we have legislation that is now in place. Personally, I don't think it's strong enough. But, you know, downloading for free is theft. There's no difference to you, I, or anyone else walking into Sainsbury's or any other shop and stealing something. And I've said it time and time again, it's theft. I mean, I don't understand how clear that needs to be in law. Section 1 of the Theft Act 1968, taking property with the intention of permanently depriving the owner of it. That doesn't specifically tell us whether it's a physical item, you know, or it's just, it's the most ridiculous philosophy that you can steal music and not be charged with anything, and it's not an offence, and that we're absolutely fine because it's not a physical product. I find that astonishing. So it's irrelevant what the percentage is in the difference of who would have bought it, who wouldn't have bought it. But I do think that the key here is we have to create better music. We have to create better products. And I think people will buy into things as they have done, as they have done in the past with the Arctic Monkeys, who downloaded, well, we gave away free downloads with the Arctic Monkeys, you know, but it was, the downloads were the demos. But people got into the band, that did turn them onto it. But the big thing is here, we owned those demos. We were able to give them away for free. They weren't owned by the record company. We weren't giving someone else's product away. And when we then put a record out, it sold massive amounts. And the reason it sold massive amounts is we created a club within a culture. And people bought into that. And I don't believe that we're doing that at the moment. So I think that it's six or one and a half dozen the other. Yes, people are downloading, but are they buying into these clubs? Are they buying into the new culture, whatever it's going to be? You know, whether it's the culture of the Rolling Stones and the Beatles through to the culture of, you know, I don't know, glam rock or punk rock or whatever it's going to be, there has to be a new culture. And as an industry, we're looking for it, and when it comes along, we need to embrace it. Because punk rock may have started with the Sex Pistols, but it gave us Elvis Costello, it gave us The Police, which is Sting. It gave us lots of big, big artists in that era that wrote great songs and were great performers. At the moment, the biggest area of new artists is coming from a family entertainment program. You know, X Factor, Pop Idols, which, hey, look, I'm not knocking it. It's family entertainment. Is it creating long-term careers for artists? I guess not. Is it creating sales? Yes. Is it creating business? Yes. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I don't think that in that particular avenue, that corridor, we're creating any massive futures. But But we need to look at it and say, well, that's part of the culture today, but we need to create different corridors and make sure that those corridors are, you know, as fast moving as TV promoted or TV artists are turning themselves around, and there's a massive turnaround in those artists. But then, you know, the truth is, I guess if I went on TV every Saturday night singing Three Blind Mice for 9 weeks, maybe I'd have a number one record. But maybe not, you know, but hey, who knows?
Okay, at what point do you feel that an artist needs a manager, and what are the conflicts between an artist and a manager usually? What type of things create the initial tension?
You know, an artist needs a manager pretty much from day one in their professional career. But they can't expect to go top of the management, I guess, priority list until such time as they're in the frame to make records, make the right move in their career. And it's not based on finance, it's based on the fact that are you now developed? So if you go to a good manager who's prepared to develop you and work with artists in a development stage, that's very important. But you also have to be very patient. A lot of artists, when they sign management deals, think, here it is, we're off and running, the manager's going to, as I said earlier, turn this into a massive deal and we're magicians. That's not the correct time for an artist to get excited. The time to come into a manager is at that point where you have something worth developing, and if an artist is going to be patient and a manager is prepared to develop it, then artists should open their arms and embrace that, as opposed to thinking, no, the manager's got to get me a record deal. You've got to be good enough to get a record deal, but more importantly, you need to be good enough to sell records. And so many artists have the potential, but want it to happen overnight. And I guess a lot of that's due to, you know, TV programs that produce overnight stars. But the truth is, if we're going back to real music and creating careers, development is incredibly important. And this is the time where the clock's not on. When you can pick up an artist early and develop them early and have them in a patient frame of mind, as opposed to got to do it, we can create good things with artists. But the truth is, most artists want it very, very quickly. You know, they're not used to this period of I guess learning and developing. They want it too quickly, and it doesn't matter how good we are as managers. It is down to the product. Whether I can pick the phone up and make a deal for an artist is almost irrelevant, because at some point you have to go to radio, they have to play it, you have to go to TV, you know, they've got to put you on television, and then you've got to, you know, have the consumer judge you. And if it's not good enough at that point, that's your one shot, gone. And I believe that you have to get it right. And as a manager, as a professional manager, I'm not prepared to do any of the steps of doing deals, going to TV, going to radio, until it's right. So patience is a very important virtue. And as far as conflict, I don't believe there's a conflict unless an artist doesn't agree with that time and that, you know, has the patience. Well, then you're going to have a conflict that they want to go and do a record deal earlier. Manager may not be able to, manager may not want to. So at that stage, different stages of the career, you're going to have different discussions. At that stage, that's what your conflict's going to be. Later on down the line, you may be overworking an artist. You know, they may feel that they're doing too many breakfast radio shows and too many early morning TV shows and getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, I just say to artists, it's really simple. It's when you're not doing those that you want to worry, not when you're doing it. When you're getting up at 5 in the morning, smile to yourself and say, thank the Lord, someone wants me. People want to have, and those are the biggest viewer shows. Breakfast shows, you know, biggest viewers, biggest listeners, those are the ones you want to be on. And then later down the line, you know, clearly what causes a lot of conflict, a lot of problems, are financial arguments. So as a management business, one thing I'll never argue over is money. The money goes to their accountants, our money comes to us. So the one thing that I can clearly say I'm never going to argue with an artist about is money. That's in the contract, that's put away, we know how much we charge for our services, we know what they've got to pay, we know what they've got to do, they know what we've got to do. Lawyers and accountants, you deal with that, guys. I'll argue with any of my clients until I'm blue in the face, but it will be about a creative thing, and it will be about the reasoning behind doing certain things, okay, and it will be in conjunction with them. And I'm not looking to be managed by an artist, but then I'm not looking to be an artist either.
How important do you feel, like we spoke before, how important is radio actually, and is it possible for an artist to have a high selling album without a hit record on the radio?
Look, radio makes hits, okay? Banks make billionaires. It's that simple. Without radio, you're not having a hit. Virtually end of discussion. There's always going to be people who go, hang on a second, there was that record that got played in the clubs, da da da. Of course, you know, but we're not talking about the minority, we are generalising. And in general terms, without radio, you are not having a hit. Done. General comment, general fact. You know, yes, there's isolated examples of hits coming from all different areas. And remember, we are putting aside TV talent shows here, because that is based on TV exposure. So just in the general terms, without radio, you're fucked. So it's no different to the big world outside. Like I said, without money, any business is fucked. So radio, banks, institutions, it's all the same. Without the backup, without the investment, without record companies, without all types of investment within any industry, you're not going to have a hit record. But it starts with the investment and it ends at radio. And you need to be able to get right the way through investment to radio to consumer. It's that simple. And A plus B equals C, as I've said many times before. Great song, that's where it starts.
What is the roles of a radio plugger? Because a lot of people don't know the actual role that a radio plugger plays. Is it the manager or is it the label who actually solicits the radio pluggers to do a job for them?
I've been in this business over 25 years and I'm still not sure what the effect of a radio plugger is. Not necessarily what the role of a radio plugger. I think we all know the radio plugger's job is to take the record and get it onto radio. But I'm never sure what the real effect is. So if you go back to basics and make a great song, or make a great record from a great song, you know, the chances are you will get it on radio. And if I look at songs like Rewind, I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor, Dream on Dreamer, songs that I've been involved with over the past, that are not necessarily radio songs. The fact is, has the plugger convinced them to put those on radio? I doubt it very much. I believe that there's been support in radio for that record. They've put it on radio. And a good plugger is a person, for me, that will put it in front of radio's face and keep on doing that. But ultimately, I think they're somewhere between messengers and fans trying to get stuff on radio for their clients. And yeah, of course they want to get everything on radio, you know, yes, but they can't love everything they take. It's a job. Just by virtue of the fact they're getting paid to do it by the client means they have to go in and say it's great. So if I was a radio executive, you know, it's down to relationships. Do I believe that he loves every record? Of course not. But I know he's getting paid to sell that record in, so his job is to get it on radio. You know, I'm not convinced that if I was a radio plugger, the difference would be between a bad song and a radio plugger in getting it on. But with a good song or a borderline song, a radio plugger can probably do some good things that help the record along its way.
And you know, like, we were speaking up before about the music being kind of predictable nowadays. If it's quite predictable, then what keeps you passionate about being involved in the industry that is somewhat predictable 12 months in advance?
I'm passionate about music. I started my life as a musician. I love music. So, to be honest with you, my three passions in this order are great song, great deal, great sex. That's one, two, and three. And that's never going to change. Whatever I'm doing, great song makes my day. Great deals make me happy. Great sets. Well, that rounds off one and two anyway. So it's really simple. That's what drives me every day. I love the buzz of looking at new talent, listening to new talent. I love the buzz of working with new artists that are enthusiastic and understand the job at hand, because it's not all about the music. You know, unfortunately, it's probably not even 50% of the beginning. But I love working with enthusiastic artists and ones that want to succeed and driven artists. And I'll continue to do this job for as long as I have driven, focused artists that want to be managed in a professional way.
And just randomly, you've kind of like alluded to the point now, but what do you see as, who, is there any artists out there currently who you see as being the next big thing for 2011, and what do you feel actually makes a star in terms of music?
A star is someone that has an aura about them. You know, it's very difficult to actually put it into words, but you know when you meet somebody, they have the potential to be a star, or they're slightly different, or, you know, to be a star is not necessarily about being on television. That makes you famous. Today, the problem, the culture that we have, is you do the red carpet, and then you become a star. You know, where we come from, you have to work with your artistry and then become a star. You know, so during that period, you either have it or you don't, but every star, inverted commas, that I've ever worked with has had the drive and the passion and the talent to get their music across to the masses. And that's probably what makes a star, and a long-term star. That's very, very important to understand, that they also are driven and in control creatively of what they want. They know, most stars know what they want. When people come through the door and they're not sure and they're relying on management or record companies to give them a persona, you know, what should I say, what should I do, etc., etc., 9 out of 10 times you pick that up as being, you know, the industry picks it up as being pretty manufactured, and see you later, goodbye. So those are things that are essential, and that's the common factor with every star I've worked with, that they have. And I think in answer to your question, who's going to be successful, I think Nicki Minaj is going to be a big, big star in this country this year. I think as a female, she's definitely one to look out for. I think from a male point of view, Drake is going to have a wonderful year, great year in this country. I think we're also looking at a new culture that will be created this year, that will be guitar driven, and I think we're going to see that towards the latter part of the year. We're going to see some excitement of acts, thankfully, that I'm not talking about, that, you know, some I have a vested interest in, and more I don't. But there are some very exciting new guitar bands out there that are bringing something new, and I think we'll find the second half of this year we'll start bringing some new styles and new flavours to our radio and TVs.
And lastly, any advice that you have for upcoming, or people actually are managing artists, is there any advice that you would give them in terms of how they should go about their business with their artists?
Advice I'd give a manager, an up-and-coming manager, is it's very difficult to succeed in the world of management today, because deals, unfortunately, are a lot smaller. And when you're trying to pay your bills on 20% of a reduced advance, it's very difficult. So I would suggest that young managers today look to partner up with people, partner up to reduce their overheads, to allow them to do what they need to do, which is manage the artist, and let a partner take care of a lot of the business side of things and the strain and certainly the financial concern that a young manager would have. And that's something at TFA that I'm very, very passionate about, is looking for new young artists to give them a home, some central heating, a few quid, and get them managing their artists and do what a young manager, potentially good young manager, should be doing, without the fear of paying their rent, their phone bills and staff. So I'm looking to facilitate young managers, and I believe that, unfortunately, that is the only way that a young manager can manage more than one artist and have more than one, you know, pop at the cherry, you know, pop at it. And I know that sounds coarse, you know, more than one pop, but, you know, we are in a world, if we're going to be real as a manager, not just talk bollocks about oh yeah, we love all our acts. We're in a commercial business. Yes, we like our acts, but ultimately they're not all going to happen. Let's be totally honest about it. They're not all going to happen. And if you think they are, wake up. Right? So you need more than one act. But as a, if you're a young, bright manager, you'll get it. But you can't sign more than one act because it's unfortunately, it's a vicious circle. You have one act, and if it does well, you're so busy on your mobile phone running around with that act that you haven't got time to look at another act. By the time you have, your overhead cost is catching up on you. If you do have another act, they're always going to say, well, you're on the road with this act. Unfortunately, the advances aren't big enough today as they were maybe when I started, where I could do great deals for artists, big advances on records, big advances on publishing, which allowed me to pay for an office, maybe one person answering the phone, and I had a little infrastructure to start with. Unfortunately, if you do a deal today and you take $100,000 for your artist on records and publishing, that's actually, you know, a very, very sensible deal. You know, and you've done well. In fact, that's respectable. So, out of that, you've made $20,000 commission, which, by the way, doesn't get paid in one go. It gets paid over a period of 18 months. But nevertheless, you've made $20,000. Once you pay tax, you're down to $15,000. Let's say you've got your mobile phone and, you know, your travel, that's $5,000. So you're now down to £10,000. Well, £10,000 equates to £200 a week. Okay, so now you're stereotypifying that manager has to either live at home or live in a squat, because I don't know where else you can live and eat for £200 a week, right? So you're now reducing the actual playing field for a manager to survive in. Therefore, I'm very, very passionate about saying, well, you know what, if you're good, and I'm looking for good managers, we'll house you. We'll take that whole element of it away from you, the whole stress of having to pay for your phone and also help you at the top end with contacts, etc., etc. So my advice to young managers is, you know, look at businesses like ourselves that are looking to facilitate and encourage and help young managers, rather than run around with a mobile phone and be the artist's best friend. Because, you know, the truth is, you need to have more than one iron in the fire, and if you're going to be successful. And more importantly, make sure, as a further bit of advice to young managers, that you have a contract. Because it's really simple. If you want loyalty, buy a dog. Right? And that's not to say that all artists are disloyal. But if you're investing your own time and your own money and your own resources into something, and you are basing it on the success of that artist, take that advice and have a contract just in case. In that very, very small chance that the artist might decide to run off when they're successful, make sure you've got a contract.
Okay. Thank you for that, Mr. Lester.
That was a pleasure.
So that was fantastic.